This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
There are over 100,000 products that can come from cannabis, you know, the industrial benefits of it. I mean, you can build an entire house from cannabis alone.
That's South African cannabis advocate Connor Davis talking about the possible uses of the herb. Details coming up. Also, the United States plans to cut 700 troops from its operations in Africa as it shifts its focus to other areas. And an explosion on a Zimbabwe bus has killed at least 42 people. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the United States plans to cut 700 troops from its operations in Africa as it shifts its focus to other areas. The change comes after more than 15 years of building the Africa Command, and it's part of the Pentagon's newest national defense strategy. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about what the change means and which region will see the most troops leave.
There aren't specific nations listed, but based on what I'm hearing from officials, you can deduce that West Africa is going to have the cuts, because the officials have told me that there will be no changes to Somalia, no changes to Libya, no changes to Djibouti. So that pretty much leaves the counterterrorism operations in West Africa. And the reason for this is because the department is trying to focus on near-peer competitors, Russia and China. And so in doing that, they thought, well, let's look at the counterterrorism, because that was the top priority for years. And let's start with Africa Command and see if we need to move resources and people around. And so they did a review, they evaluated the counterterrorism, and they decided that, yes, let's make a more resource-sustainable plan by moving some of those Africa Command counterterrorism troops and their enablers, like the cooks, et cetera, and make them more focused on the future fight, the potential future fight, I should say, against Russia and China.
Now, what are the implications then for the U.S. operations in Africa? Are they saying that they see terrorism out of Africa as less of a threat to the United States and its allies?
That's exactly right. They see terrorism as a threat in Africa. But when they have to prioritize, they want to focus on protecting the homeland and key national interests. And when they're looking at the globe, they see the situation in Afghanistan, the problem with Islamic State in the Middle East. That is where the counterterrorism has the most priority and the most possibility, I should say, of affecting the homeland. The situation in Somalia could potentially affect the homeland. They don't see the terrorism in West Africa as getting out of Africa. They realize that they need to stem that, and that's a problem, and they want to help their allies. And they're going to continue to do that through other programs and also through supporting the French. I think there are also some British troops there. But that you hit it right on the head, the nail right on the head. It's going to be prioritizing what can affect the homeland most.
Now, 700 troops out of the total U.S. military, that's not a lot. In terms of realigning against, as you say, near-peer competitors, Russia, China, other large military forces, does that imply that there could be other changes coming down the road for the U.S. Africa Command?
It's possible. This was the first evaluation, and a U.S. official told me that things could continue to fluctuate as the threat became assessed. They're constantly reassessing the threat in Africa. That doesn't mean it necessarily means there's another reduction coming. It could be another increase coming, depending on what's needed. But Africa Command was the first that was reevaluated, and we can look at some of the other commands and maybe see some of their counterterror forces shifting as well as they continue to go through this process, because counterterrorism is still important for the United States, but it is not the top priority anymore. That is the potential competition with Russia and China, because the Secretary of Defense has said that, frankly, China and Russia have made gains in closing the gap of the U.S. competitive advantage. And he says before they completely close that gap, the United States needs to take action in moving forward and modernizing and making its forces lethal.
That was VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb speaking with Kate Pound Dawson today. Now that South Africa's highest court has relaxed the nation's laws on marijuana, local entrepreneurs are trying to cash in on the popular herb. Among the latest entries to the market, several cannabis-laced alcohol products, which deliver the unique taste, though not the signature high. Marijuana activists say this could be just the beginning and that the plant, some call weed, could do much more for the region's economy. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Marijuana is getting its time in South Africa's spotlight after being decriminalized in September. The landmark Constitutional Court ruling, which will still need to be translated into law, now allows South Africans to legally grow and consume their own cannabis at home. The ruling explicitly forbids dealing in marijuana products, meaning simply, if you don't already have it, you can't buy or sell it. But the buzz around this long-forbidden plant has also seen a slew of pot-themed products on South African shelves. Natasha Nkonjera is sales manager for Poison City Brewing, which released a cannabis-infused beer right after the court ruling.
We sold out of our first batch of stock within 10 days of its release, and at the moment we brewed 100,000 liters for the next batch, which we've sold out already, so we're doubling that to 200,000 liters for the next batch. So it's absolutely incredible.
None of these store-friendly products contain THC, the chemical that causes marijuana's dazed and confused effects, which is still considered a prohibited narcotic. But even without the psychoactive component, or a strong taste of marijuana, they're selling like hotcakes. Cannabis advocate Connor Davis released a hemp-infused gin through his family distillery, Monk's Gin. He says these novelty drinks are just the start for pot products in South Africa.
Over 100,000 products that can come from cannabis, you know, the industrial benefits of it. I mean, you can build an entire house from cannabis alone, from the insulation to the actual brickwork to your carpeting to your linen. Everything can be made from hemp, so that has incredible potential.
South Africa, with its sunny and temperate weather and rich arable land, has long been one of the world's top growers and exporters of illegal cannabis. But with the change in law, the government's Department of Trade and Industry is now studying the economic potential of the plant. Davis says he believes the cannabis industry can help address South Africa's severe unemployment rates.
Statistics that we have been comparing from the United States to South Africa, potentially immediately from day one, we've got at least 200,000 jobs to be given in the cannabis industry.
Julian Stobbs and Myrtle Clark are longtime marijuana advocates who led the push for South Africa's landmark ruling. They see a number of commercial uses for marijuana, such as the lucrative beauty market, says Clark.
I think that the cosmetic potential of cannabis is enormous. I use a 1% THC-infused moisturizer, which is absolutely amazing. And everything from balms for your tattoos to hair products, I think that has got huge potential to try and get rid of as many of the chemicals that we put in our skin and our hair.
Stobbs, her partner, is less optimistic about commercialization, but sees marijuana entering the culture in a way it never has before.
I see quite a scary future. I see different cultures trying to get in on the deal now that it's hip to the groove and not a scaly thing to be doing, smoking skanky joints, and now it's really hip and you've got beautiful vaporizers and stuff and epic glass and vape pens and Beverly Hills chicks doing it on chat shows.
But that, Stobbs admits, is the point of legalizing cannabis. Once you plant that seed, it grows like, well, a weed. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
An explosion on a Zimbabwe bus has killed at least 42 people. Speculation on the cause focused on a cooking gas cylinder carried by a passenger. At least 20 other people were hospitalized with burns. The bus was traveling from Bulawayo, the country's second largest city, to the Bet Bridge crossing at the South African border when it caught fire around midnight last night. Survivors reported smelling gas and that the fire started when the driver turned on the lights. Some escaped the blaze by crawling out the windows. with deadly crashes far too common, the government has focused on road safety and improving the country's poorly maintained roads. 50 people died last week when two buses crashed head-on. Farmers in Zimbabwe are appealing for funds to irrigate their land in hopes of fending off a possible drought predicted by the UN Food and Agricultural Organization. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the FAO says droughts caused by the El Niño weather pattern are recurring more often, and that might affect food security.
At Mugutu Farm, about 40 kilometers north of Harare, a tractor tills land ahead of the rainy season, expected anytime now. But at another farm nearby, 59-year-old Tsitsi Majori Makaya is focused on raising her chickens. We cannot do irrigation. We do not have the money to set up the irrigation system. The money to buy pipes for electricity, we do not have the money. We only manage to drill a borehole, and that is how we water our garden. We cannot put the whole plot under irrigation because we do not have all the necessary equipment, she says. When asked if she was aware of the El Nino drought predicted, the former vegetable vendor says, there is nothing we can do about it. All we say is the rain belongs to God. Sometimes they say there's not much rain coming, and we end up having plenty of rain. Since we started living here in 2000, we have never had any problems with rain. All other areas might have challenges with rainfall, but never in this area, she added. But Patrick Komawa, head of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, in Southern Africa, says depending on rain-fed agriculture on the continent is not a good idea anymore.
El Nino is here to stay. And in countries where agriculture relies on rainfall agriculture, we believe that member states should try to see how best they can invest in irrigation schemes. For instance, here in Zimbabwe, we have worked with the government to rehabilitate about 34 irrigation schemes. And this is showing tremendous improvement in the productivity of farmers.
He said even smallholder irrigation schemes were improving food security and income in countries where agriculture is the backbone of the economy. The FAO envoy said with irrigation plans, the effects of droughts would be mitigated and ensure food security. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
The UN Children's Agency says more than 1.3 million children are expected to receive treatment for extreme malnutrition in Africa's Sahel region this year. That's more than double the figure for last year in six countries: Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, Niger, and Senegal. UNICEF cited insufficient rains, high food prices, armed conflict, and insecurity. The number was below the 1.6 million that UNICEF projected at the first of the year. The agency partly credited its quick response in early detection of malnutrition and getting supplies and medicines to those in need. But UNICEF says it still faces a funding gap of about 65%, which limits efforts to help communities become self-reliant and better prepared against recurring malnutrition. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The United States plans to cut 700 troops from its operations in Africa as it shifts its focus to other areas. An explosion on a Zimbabwe bus has killed at least 42 people. And the UN Children's Agency says more than 1.3 million children are expected to receive treatment for extreme malnutrition in Africa's Sahel region this year. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Young African activists are urging governments to address the cultural and legal barriers that may prevent them from accessing contraception. Officials from the United Nations Population Fund say without solving that problem, young African women will continue to die from unwanted pregnancies. Eugene Uwimana reports from Kigali.
In my country, when a girl gets pregnant, she's kicked out of school.
Dr. Natalia Kanim is the executive director of the United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA. She says there, young Africans need to know about family planning methods to avoid unwanted pregnancies, which can cause lifelong problems for young women and their children.
We heard from young people who had to learn by accident and forego some of their potential. Our concern is that young people be informed, age appropriate, about contraception, and that the demand that they generate for sexual and reproductive health services.
Due to legal and cultural barriers, what Kanim seeks may not be easy to attain. Noela Izele is a 22-year-old Rwandan. She thinks there are many laws that should be changed for girls to gain their rights.
Here in Rwanda, there is a law that says that everybody who is under 18 is not allowed to access family planning methods and some services of SHRA, which is sexual reproductive health. So I think personally it's something that we need to change and to advocate for the Ministry of Health so that they can change that law. Because even if they are under 18, but they are people who also need to access them because they do sex.
Josephine Kibarumbai is the Director General of the National Council for Population and Development in Kenya. She says Kenya tries to counter cultural barriers to reproductive health through the Ministry of Education.
Because there has been a review of the education curriculum in Kenya. So trying to see what content in terms of comprehensive sexuality is required for the different levels of education, if it's primary, secondary, or primary 1 to 3, and so forth.
Family planning activists say there is an urgent need to address contraceptive access for youth. The World Health Organization says complications from pregnancy and childbirth are a leading cause of death in young women aged 15 to 19 in developing countries. An estimated 70,000 adolescent mothers die each year because they have children before they are physically ready. The risk is highest for girls who give birth when they are under the age of 14. The UN Population Fund says that a third of women from developing countries give birth before the age of 20, ranging from 8% in East Asia to 55% in West Africa. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali.
According to the French press agency, rebels attacked a community in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo and killed at least 5 civilians. The report quoted local officials saying the attack came late Thursday in the Beni region. It was a day after 8 United Nations peacekeepers and 12 DRC soldiers died fighting the Allied Democratic Forces, an Islamist group with roots in Uganda. Beni is at the center of an Ebola outbreak that has sickened more than 300 people, including more than 200 who have died. DRC and international health workers have struggled to contain the outbreak in an area where scores of militant groups operate. A UN official said the UN and DRC forces on Wednesday were attacked in a successful operation to push the rebels from their base near Beni. One Tanzanian peacekeeper and 7 Malawians were killed in the fighting. Somalia's 30 years of chronic conflict have left an estimated 1 in 3 people affected by mental health issues such as post-traumatic stress disorder. However, there are only 3 licensed psychiatrists in the entire country. Mohamed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu on Somalia's huge mental health challenges.
20-year-old Ayan Adam and her mother fled Somalia to Kenya after the terrorist group Al-Shabaab in 2010 attacked their Mogadishu neighborhood. But their asylum applications were rejected.
We fled the armed gangs and explosions in Mogadishu and reached the Hagardere refugee camp. We stayed there for 18 months, but when our hopes were dashed, we moved back home.
Adam moved into the center, which treats post-traumatic stress disorder after suffering a mental breakdown. Halima Roble, Ayani's mother.
I started searching for her, but as I was looking, I received a call informing me that my daughter was found by an aid agency in the area. I rushed to the location where my daughter was and saw that she had savage bruising on her body and was screaming.
The World Health Organization says 1/3 of Somalis are affected by mental health issues like PTSD. But Ayan is one of the few who are getting proper treatment. Dr. Abdulrahman Ali Awale is one of only 3 licensed psychiatrists in Somalia, a country of approximately 15 million people.
Causes of post-traumatic stress disorder in this country include constant fear, owing to the hostility of surrounding people, explosions, displacement, unemployment, and poverty, which is actually one of the main causes of stress.
Impoverished Somalia's focus on security means there are few resources to treat mental health problems. Addiction to drugs, such as the narcotic stimulant leaf HAT, only worsens the problem. Patients suffer from a lack of medicine and medical infrastructure and poorly qualified doctors. Dr. Abdulrazaq Yusuf is Director of Medical Services for Somalia's Ministry of Health.
Though PTSD has been included in the country's national strategic plan, the government is unable to come up with official baseline data that has delayed the government's necessary intervention towards PTSD in regards to treatment, prevention and psychosocial counselling. All these obstacles have prevented us from effectively dealing with PTSD.
Meanwhile, Somalis like Adam are doing their best to cope and recover from the trauma of violence, with the hope that one day they can live a normal life. Mohamed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Zubair Tayan, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.